This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my upcoming book, The Wellness Trap. Break free from diet culture, disinformation, and dubious diagnoses, and find your true well-being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap to learn more and pre-order for its April 2023 release. That's ChristyHarrison.com/thewellnesstrap. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now wherever books are sold, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised.
Anti-diet revolution, we're for health at every size.
Hey there, welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering an audience question about whether labeling some foods as quote-unquote fun and limiting their consumption is compatible with intuitive eating and diet culture recovery. This is a time of year when you'll hear a lot about cleansing and resetting and atoning for all the pleasurable foods you ate over the holidays. So I thought it would be interesting to explore this concept of fun foods and whether that term is even helpful. Before I answer, a few quick announcements. This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course, which I'm offering as a live workshop on January 17th. If you want to learn more about intuitive eating, including how to navigate some of the trickier nuances and avoid turning it into a diet, this workshop is for you. You'll learn what intuitive eating is and isn't, why it's associated with better health outcomes than dieting, and how to implement its principles without falling into common diet culture traps. You'll also get a chance to ask me your questions about intuitive eating and making peace with food, which is a rare occasion these days since I've been so busy with childcare. So this is a good chance to interact with me and get your questions answered if you're interested in that. And the workshop is open to everyone, the general public, but it's also a great continuing education opportunity for healthcare providers. If this sounds up your alley, you can learn more and sign up at ChristyHarrison.com/workshop and get a special early bird deal now through January 10th. That's ChristyHarrison.com/workshop. Now, without any further ado, let's get into this week's question. It's from Andrea, who writes, "In a recent piece in your newsletter, you answered a question about intuitive eating and mindfulness. The person who asked the question used the term, quote unquote, fun food, which I first heard in a non-diet diabetes group on Facebook. The group forbade any talk of diets or intentional weight loss, but it did allow discussion of eating too much fun food, because according to the moderators, that is part of the intuitive eating model. I ended up leaving the group over this issue because to me it felt like food moralizing. As someone who has been healing from disordered eating for the last 15 years and dealing with diabetes for the last 10, I wonder about fun food as a designation. To me, it suggests some foods are quote unquote less than, less healthy, less nutritious, less worthy to be part of one's everyday eating. And to me, this seems like a gateway to restriction. Would you please talk about this and help me understand how designating some foods as fun can be a helpful practice?" So thanks, Andrea, for that great question. And before I answer, I'll just give my usual disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. Also, this is just my take as one dietitian and journalist, and I hope you'll seek out other perspectives and consult your own inner compass as well. So it's totally understandable that you'd have this reaction to a group that was full of these kinds of discussions, you know, eating too many quote unquote fun foods. Sounds really triggering. I know many people who'd find that kind of talk profoundly unhelpful when they're trying to heal from disordered eating. Recovery from disordered eating often requires having a space that's free from diet culture messages, where you can get support in reconnecting with your internal cues and your sense of pleasure and satisfaction in food, and learn to make peace with all foods and not label foods as good and bad. And so it sounds like, for you at least, this group was not such a space. To be clear, it's not part of the intuitive eating model to put any restrictions on quote-unquote fun foods, right? If you're relabeling certain foods as fun instead of quote-unquote bad or quote-unquote unhealthy, but you're still treating them as though they're bad by telling yourself you shouldn't eat them, then that's not true intuitive eating. It's just a diet by another name. Intuitive eating is an anti-diet approach that emphasizes unconditional permission to eat all foods. Over time, this approach can help you become habituated to the foods that you once saw as bad, so that you no longer fear them or feel out of control around them. Instead, you feel at peace in their presence, and you view them as simply one option among many. You don't feel compelled or compulsive around them. Gentle nutrition awareness eventually comes into play with intuitive eating as well, but it's the 10th and last principle of intuitive eating for a reason, right? As I'm always saying. And that reason is, it's hard to approach nutrition in a truly gentle and non-restrictive way if you're still telling yourself you shouldn't eat certain things and beating yourself up when you do. Now, all that being said, some people may use the term quote-unquote fun foods in ways that support them in healing from disordered eating and diet culture. So it's nuanced, right? For example, if you've been so fixated on the perceived badness of foods like sweets and snacks, etc., that you've developed an all-consuming fear of those foods, or if your guilt about eating them has driven you into a restrict rebound cycle with them, right, or a restrict binge cycle, then labeling those foods as fun might be an important step away from diet culture demonization and towards a more peaceful relationship with them. Because quote-unquote fun food is a far more positive framing than diet culture's stigmatizing label of quote-unquote junk food, right? So when you're far enough into recovery, you may find you don't need to categorize foods in this way anymore anyway. You're able to see all foods as emotionally equivalent and not possessing any moral goodness or badness. But many people find it hard to entirely let go of those categories right away. And so moving from quote-unquote junk to quote-unquote fun can be a radical linguistic and conceptual shift for some people that helps them learn to see the value in foods they once viewed as having none. Labeling certain kinds of foods as fun also doesn't have to mean they're less than. For one thing, fun is essential in our lives. Especially if you've been feeling devoid of fun in the food department, you might understandably find yourself gravitating towards more pleasurable foods. Diet and wellness culture often deny the need for food to be fun, breaking each meal down into stark platefuls of numbers and nutrients. And so reclaiming the right to have food that brings you joy is a really important aspect of healing from disordered eating. What's more, the foods that get labeled as fun actually serve other important functions as well. So sweets and starchy snacks, for example, are a source of quick energy, which is incredibly helpful when you're experiencing a dip in blood sugar or you need your hunger satisfied fast. Carbs provide the optimal source of fuel for your brain, and having enough of them in your day can help your mood and your energy levels. And including carbohydrate-rich foods in a meal or snack, along with protein and fat, generally helps you feel more satiated than if you skimped on or skipped the carbs. I realize all of this can be complicated when you have diabetes, right? Carbohydrates, and especially sugar, tend to get demonized in the conventional discourse about diabetes, where the message is often to cut out or avoid carbs and sugar for both prevention and management of the disease. But that conventional discourse is really misleading, as I discussed in episode 284 of the podcast, which we'll link to in the show notes. Entirely cutting out or drastically limiting sugar generally isn't needed, even for people with diabetes. And in fact, it could potentially backfire by putting you in a restrict rebound cycle that's ultimately riskier for your health than simply learning to have a more peaceful relationship with sugary foods. So even if you need to count carbohydrates for insulin dosing, for example, it's possible to do that without treating the high-carb foods as bad or wrong or off-limits. Ideally, a non-diet diabetes support group wouldn't reinforce moralizing ideas about those foods. And to be fair, it's possible that some other members of the group might not perceive these comments about quote-unquote fun foods as moralizing, because different people can have different reactions to terms like this. But, you know, in my experience, social forums like Facebook groups often aren't great places for these kinds of discussions for that very reason. Because it's hard enough to manage a small eating recovery group in person, where you might have 10 people at distinct points on the disordered eating spectrum, right? But on social media platforms, where there are often dozens or hundreds or even thousands of people at various stages of healing, it's virtually impossible to meet the specific needs of every single person. So online groups can, of course, be helpful for some people as adjuncts to medical and mental health care, or even in some cases as stopgaps for people who don't have access to care. But those groups really lack the real-time, face-to-face element that can help in talking through disagreements and supporting people at different points in their recovery and dealing with issues where someone gets triggered by someone else's language. So if you can, I would say it's helpful to work with an individual treatment team to help support you in your recovery from disordered eating and diet culture and help you manage the diabetes as well. I have a list of folks who've been on the podcast that we'll link to in the show notes, and many of them offer virtual sessions and sliding scale fees. And I'll point especially to Lauren Newman, who specializes in disordered eating from an anti-diet lens. I hope that's helpful in thinking through this situation, Andrea, and thanks again so much for the great question. If you want to submit your own question for a chance to have it answered either here or in my Food Psych Weekly newsletter, or both, you can go to kristiharrison.com/questions. That's our show for today, and I want to thank you so much for listening. If you want to learn more about intuitive eating, including how to navigate some of the trickier nuances and avoid turning it into a diet, come check out my Intro to Intuitive Eating workshop, which I'm offering live on January 17th. You'll learn the basics of this anti-diet approach, and you'll get a chance to ask me your questions about intuitive eating and making peace with food. You can learn more and sign up for the workshop at kristiharrison.com/workshop and get a special early bird deal now through January 10th. That's kristiharrison.com/workshop. This episode was brought to you by my second book, The Wellness Trap: Break Free from Diet Culture, Disinformation, and Dubious Diagnoses, and Find Your True Well-Being, which is available for pre-order now. Just go to kristiharrison.com/thewellnesstrap to learn more and pre-order it for its April 2023 release. That's kristiharrison.com/thewellnesstrap. For full show notes and a transcript of this episode, go to kristiharrison.com/307. A big thanks, as always, to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Watasek, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and producer, Kristi Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.